Hey everyone, excited to introduce to you my next guest, Romeo Leon, who is a SaaS customer success executive at Mad Kudu. I just learned what a kudu is today. So yeah. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, there's we refer to three different types of kudus when we think about our customers. So just research this. There's dick dicks. There is, and then there's a great kudu at the very top, and then there's a kind of like the Impala in the middle. So, and those all represent like different states of maturity with customers. But I urge you to research dick dicks. They're the cutest animals ever. So,
Cool.
They're essentially like miniature, you know, like Rudolphs. So.
Yeah, they have some. That, I mean, that's a pretty mean antler that they have. Like, that's, yeah. I like it. I'd feel cool if I had that.
I tried to see if I can buy a dick kudu and have a petting zoo here, but apparently the state of California does not allow it. So,
oh, I think I have seen one of the Natural History Museums, the one in New York.
Okay. Yeah.
It's very distinct, like you said. Like, yeah. Like not a lot of animals have that. You know,
that's probably the great kudu, the greater kudu. So like, they're it's wild, right?
Yeah.
But the dick dicks, they're like this big, right? Like they're literally like this big. They're miniature ones, and I didn't even know they existed. Anyways. <let's
get going. laughs> Yes. So we met through the Society of Asians. Of customer success and sales professionals, and I really appreciated your talk. And you know, just growing up, I feel that makes me sound like I'm old, but just like, you know, being an account exec, I'm a mid-market account executive. I just didn't meet a lot of Asian executives in the tech world.
So neither am I. So we're in the same boat. So.
Yeah, so that's the reason why I'm putting together this resource for a lot of folks, because I have been getting reached out by a lot of like younger Asians who are like just starting to get into their tech roles, like their first BDR roles, SDR roles, their first CS roles, and they're always asking me the same questions.
Yeah.
So I figured, okay, like I think this would be a really good repository of resources for folks.
Yeah,
and you know, this could be valuable, I'm sure, 5 years from now, right? So that's the reason why.
I hope so. I mean, I hope I have some, you know, good learnings to share, but we'll see.
Yeah. And what really stood out to me about your talk was like just not the politics, because that makes it sound bad, but like just the reputation management internally and externally, especially internally, that a lot of what you said like really resonated with me. It's like, man, I wish like I learned this. And I still
I wish someone could have had that perception talk with you, right?
And, yeah.
And how you should be managing that and so on and so forth, and how that's going to affect you throughout your, you know, your tenure at that company, and even sometimes even after that company, right? So
yeah, so that was one of the big takeaways, like from the chat that we had with the one that Linda set up.
Yeah.
And yeah, so it sounds like we're going to talk about mentorship, we're going to talk about like decision making in general, and you've made, I feel like you are a really good decision maker, and so I think just being a better decision maker is important.
Tell my wife that.
she doesn't agree.
I'm kidding.
I know my wife thinks I'm a horrible decision maker. Like she's just like, what? Like, do you think?
No, before you act? I was just totally kidding about that.
But yeah, so you've been a VP of customer success at Figure Eight, and you're a senior director of customer success at Webdam, which is a Shutterstock company. I know that they're pretty big and good data. So you have a lot of consulting and a lot like, you know, project management, and you have a pretty interesting background, and I'm sure when you're at Berkeley, you weren't like, oh, I'm going to be a sales or I'm going to be a customer success VP, right? So I'm sure all this happened, you know, despite you having like a poly, what's a political economy degree?
Major. So when I was at Berkeley, it was called Political Economy of Industrial Societies. But since then, I think they renamed it just to political economy. So it's essentially like the intersection between government policy and economics, right? And so if you think about different types of sort of economic systems out there, like you have capitalism as one model, right? You have sort of kind of like socialist type of, government-led societies, and to what extent did they get to those places, like, or to those states? How effective is one at solving certain problems compared to others, and so on and so forth, right? And so it's just sort of like a comparative study of all those various political economic systems of government, right? Or just like ruling out there. So it's very interesting.
Oh, okay. Well, you don't spend too much time on this, but what do you think is the best one out of all the systems you study?
That's a thorny question. Obviously we live in a capitalistic society, right? But it's not, if you think about, if you've read Adam Smith, and sort of his vision for, capitalism back then, if you read some of Karl Marx's work, like there's actually a lot of interesting parallels, right? And Adam Smith never actually said that government has no place in society or economics, right? Far from it, actually, right? He's always kind of looked at government as a vehicle to help, increase social good. So today, in today's political kind of landscape, that's just been bastardized, right? And anytime you hear things around communism or socialism, it becomes like an evil thing. But not if you ask Adam Smith, right? There are some good things about those kinds of political economic systems, and so I don't know how I would answer that question, because it's not necessarily one is better than the other, right? One is better than the other for certain things, right? One can argue that, the capitalistic society or system is the predominant system, but you also look at China and their growth, right? And that's not necessarily a completely free capitalist society, right? And that's very much governmental led, but then there are trade-offs, right? So it really depends, right? I guess time will tell.
Yeah, I mean, they're growing just so rapidly.
And that's completely because of government intervention, right? And so people don't think about that, right? And they grew because of the result of that intervention. So who's to say that that's not as good compared to the what we've seen with America's growth, for instance, right? But if you take that aspect and then you take the social aspect, right, I'd rather live in a free society,
right?
A society where I can't speak,
It's tough, and we're biased too because we're Americans, right? So it's like, I don't know, it's hard to be objective about this, I feel like. But it seems like
it's hard to be objective because it's been there's been so much, it's been politicized way too much, right? And people use it to vilify, the other side, right? Whether it's the right vilifying the left by calling them socialists, right? Or it's the left vilifying the right, calling them, fascists. Like it's just an interesting, interesting thing. Anyways, let's not get into politics.
Yes.
That is a great subject, though.
Yeah, it is. I think it's fascinating. For our book club at Coach Hub, we're reading Adam Grant's book, Think Again.
Okay. Yeah.
That's have you read that?
I have not. No.
It's fascinating. It's about like
unlearning things, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I've never heard like, about that book.
Yeah.
Truly like trying to understand, like the more perspectives you invite into our worlds, the better. Whereas like if we're only listening to our point of view, we're never going to grow. Right. That's
yeah.
It's, exactly. Yeah. It's a good book. I like it.
Yeah. Cool.
But yeah, so I mean, clearly you've had a lot of success, right? You've been a people manager for a while, and now a VP, or you've been a VP, right? So, I mean, what advice would you give to people who like aren't sure, like if they want to take the customer success route or AE route? Or even the sales executive, or I mean, yeah. Sales engineer route.
Yeah. I mean, it's, so I tell people this because a lot of times people just don't know what they want to do. Right. Like, and no one really knows, you know, even going into college that I want to be a professor. I want to be, you know, a CEO of this company. I want to be this, I want to be that. So, and even in, you know, even young folks, right. Or like, you know, folks coming into their first jobs and companies, like they don't necessarily know like what the trajectory of their career is going to look like. They don't necessarily know what role they want to take on. But I think what's important, in this case is like, think about skill sets, right? And think about the skill sets that you actually want to develop and grow, right? Because, you know, even though you don't know what the role is that you want, you certainly know like your own self. And if you do an inventory of the skills that you have, you should be able to kind of look at the gaps there and find ways to actually get involved and get experience in those kinds of things, right? So for instance, like at my first job, when I was doing consulting, you know, the thing that I really lacked was technical skills, right? I didn't have much technical skills coming out of college, right? Because I did social science, right? As my major, I did a minor in business, but it didn't give me enough of that, you know, like sort of analytics sort of pedigree, right? That you would, in some schools they call a business major a bachelor of science. I'm not sure if it actually is, but anyways, I knew that technical skills were, you know, was something I was lacking, right? And I needed to find a way to get involved and grow in that area. So, so in the consulting world, it's really project-based, right? There's a lot of projects that come in and you know, sometimes you have the luxury of actually, you know, picking the project that you want. Sometimes you just get assigned to the project that needs people, right? But I specifically wanted projects that would help me grow technically. So one project came in that was essentially very heavy in database work, right? And I had no database experience prior to that, but I was able to learn SQL, right? Because of that project. And I became really, really good at SQL because of that project. I didn't have a choice but to learn it. And back in the day, I was using Microsoft Access, and it's probably not, you know, like, it's not a hardcore like SQL. It's not even, I'm not even sure if it's a database, but, but that's where I started, right? And then I started kind of getting into other platforms out there. So for instance, like Fox Pro and then MySQL and then, you know, and all these other things. So, I knew the gap in skill sets, right? I knew that I wanted to understand technology as much as possible. And I wanted to get my hands dirty in that. And the first step that I did to get there was to really learn the fundamentals of databases, right? And being able to kind of query them and whatnot.
That's interesting.
Those skill sets, right, are important.
So would you recommend people to, because I think a lot of people like double down on their strengths instead of try to work on their weaknesses. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you should do like a 50-50 split or what's?
Yeah. I don't know. But I think if, So for me, the way I thought about it, like for me to be as marketable and as flexible, right, as possible, and adaptable as possible, I needed to gain all those skill sets that were core, right? And if you're just focusing on your strengths, then and you know, at some point you're gonna be called on, you know, on your weak spots that you haven't tried to develop at all, and that's not gonna be a positive thing for you. So I think you should challenge yourself, right, and work on those things that you're not necessarily so good at, right, and round out your skill sets, right, such that you're that much more marketable, right, and you're that much more sort of, you can adapt more because of having a well-rounded skill set.
So that's a good takeaway. So look, see what skills are really needed, because it's going to change over time.
Yeah.
And really be.
And these skill sets are like foundational building blocks for whatever role that you want anyways, right? Like, so if you want to be a founder CEO of some new tech startup, you better have some chops in getting your hands dirty in technology, right? Like, and sort of foundational things, you know, maybe even coding, right? Because it will help you be that much more, like you have the pedigree, right? Or you have the, you could say that you've actually done that, right? And I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, there's a, like a credibility.
That credibility thing, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Huh. Interesting. So anyone who wants to work for any tech company, even if you're going to be client facing or whatever, you still recommend to have some technical knowledge so that.
But you may be coming in there with like technical skills already, right? But what I'm saying is that you kind of have to do an inventory of skill sets or the things that, you know, that you want to improve on, right? And then find those opportunities, right? And then even have people like give you feedback on the things that you should be working on, right? And that's actually kind of a good segue to just idea, this idea of mentorship, right? Because for instance, like I've been a really good product of having, you know, really, really good mentors in the past, right? Where, you know, I had a really good relationship with, you know, I've had two mentors that have kind of, you know, made a significant impact in my life. And until now, I should probably get in touch with them a little bit more, but until now we still kind of keep in touch, right? And I still kind of talk to them about, you know, issues that come up and their suggestions for how to tackle it and whatnot, right? So those relationships never really end, right? And to me that's like super cool and real and valuable, right? And I've been the beneficiary of that, right? So having mentors makes you honest, right? And makes you kind of look at yourself and reflect on the things that that you should be thinking about, right? And doing. Because sometimes you're not necessarily as self-aware as yourself, right? And you don't necessarily know the gaps that you don't know, right? You don't know what you don't know, right? Until someone actually tells you that, hey, you know, you may not, you know, you may want to skip that happy hour, right? Or you may want to come into work a little bit earlier, right? And you may want to try to, you know, dress appropriately during this customer, you know, event, right? You might want to do this, right? And here's a reason why, right? Mm-hmm. And good managers will do that, but mentors tell you why, right? And why it's important to do something and how that's going to impact the perception of you, right? In a company. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's deep. So you're saying if we actually just listen to our managers, we would get the same thing, but sometimes we're resistant because we don't know the reason why they're telling us these, like.
Yeah. And good managers tell you why, right? Like a manager could also be your mentor, right? Like But sometimes managers are much more transactional, right, in the way that they actually deal with people. But with mentors, I feel like there's a much deeper discussion, right, on the hows and whys of things, right, and you really extract, you know, a lot more substance than a plain just, you know, manager to direct report relationship.
That's so fascinating. Why do you think that is? Do you think it's just because like there's a safe space and it's a little bit far removed from?
Yeah, because I think like being a mentee, right? You've already signed up to be vulnerable, right? Like, and you've already you've set yourself up for a trustful situation. You know, like you've built trust, hopefully, right? Because a lot of people that ask for like mentorship, like they don't necessarily know what they're asking for, right? Because yeah, in a lot of ways, like it becomes this sort of transactional, I want a mentor kind of thing, right? Like, oh, can you be a mentor? Like, but no, like real mentors push you. Mm-hmm. Real mentors like make you see what you don't want to see, right? Like real mentors tell you the truth, right? Of something you may not have even thought of, right? And it's not sometimes not fun, right? Like it's not fun being told that you're X, Y, and Z, right? It's not fun that you sometimes that they're saying your quality of work isn't up to par as where it should be, right? The way that you're thinking about this problem is probably not, you know, like the steps by which you took probably is not the best approach, right? But at least someone is telling you the truth, right? And in situations outside of mentorships, you don't necessarily get that, right? So for me, it's like when you ask for a mentor, like, and you actually get a mentor, be prepared, right? That it's not all fun and games. Sometimes, I would actually say most of the times, it's tough, right? And you need to have thick skin, right, in order to take that feedback and criticism, right, and act on it.
It's like tough love, right?
It's tough love. Yeah, it's tough love, right? It's literally tough love. Yeah, but then you become better because of it, right? Because it's real, and it's not. And when you put yourself in that situation where you're super vulnerable, right, and you're like, okay, just give it to me, like, and let me reflect on that and let me think about that. Like, you know, you may have some differences in opinions, right? But for the most part, I've found that my mentors have, you know, anytime they've provided me feedback, right, for the most part, it's spot on, right? And then when I've actually, you know, made a change to the way that I've, you know, that I would normally approach it based on their feedback, the outcome becomes better.
What if you don't necessarily like agree with your mentor, but I guess like that's the thing, right? I think some people are more receptive to feedback and some people get defensive. How do we not
take if you're defensive for the most part, like don't get a mentor because it's not going to be good for you. Right.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, it's just not, right? Like, because what's the point, right? Of having someone really be that. Like a mentor provides you, for the most part, like negative feedback, right?
Like, yeah.
It's not always positive, right? Like, but because you're hearing the things that are not working, right? If you don't have thick skin, you're gonna drown in that, right? And you're not gonna rise above it. But if you are the type of person that can take criticism and then act upon it, like, then you're gonna be in a much better situation. Like think about athletes and their coaches, right? Like a coach will be real to you. Let's say you're a football player, right? And your technique just sucks, right? And that's allowed you to be, let's say, as a quarterback, sacked a lot, right? if you have a good coach, he's going to tell you exactly what you need to work on, right? Like your footwork is terrible, right? Like, you know, you should, you know, like you're not, you know, you're all over the place, like with your footwork, and
yeah,
and you need to be a little bit more kind of, I don't know exactly what that feedback would look like, but as a coach, they will tell you exactly what you need to work on if they're a good coach, right? And then as the athlete, right? Athletes tend to have really thick skin and they want to be able to improve, right? So that's kind of like the mindset, right? Like mentors are coaches, right? Like mentors are coaches.
So how does one get better at having thick skin? Is this just something you practice like over time?
I mean, even now, sometimes I don't have thick skin, right? But like, I don't know. I think it's just, maybe if it's like, if you know, like, that this relationship is going to lead to a better outcome, then you might be able to like take on, you know, and have thick skin like during the process. But sometimes people just have that, right? Like have that quality or a skill set or personality trait that allows them not to necessarily be super defensive all the time about, you know, about what they hear, right? Particularly if it's like, you know, negative criticism.
Yeah.
And they are able to compartmentalize, right? Like the feedback and act upon it, right? And that sort of like take the feedback and hold on to it so much that you can't do anything about it, right? Like do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it sounds like
you kind of drown in your own sorrow kind of thing, right?
It sounds like the most successful people are just naturally asking for feedback all the time so that they can improve. Whereas like maybe people that are middle of the pack are less likely to be so willing to ask a lot of people like, hey, where can I improve? Where are the blind spots?
Yeah, because you don't know it. Again, you don't know what you don't know, right? And sometimes you have to let your ego just, you know, kind of take a back seat and say, okay, I'm willing to be vulnerable. Please tell me what I need to work on. Even if it's rough, I'll take it, right? Because I need to hear the truth. Yeah. And then up to you whether you want to act on it or not, right? But let me tell you, if you get a mentor and then you don't act on those kinds of things, then you're not going to have a mentor for very long, right? Because
they don't want to waste their time, right?
They don't want to waste their time. Why should they, right? Like, yeah, why should you, right? It's not like you're getting paid for that, right? Like,
yeah,
there's no, I mean, there are programs out there, for instance, like for executives, you can get executive coaching, right? But that's at the executive level at that point. Like, it's really hard to find a mentor, right? Because you've kind of been at that stage already.
Yeah.
Like, you kind of do mentorship by committee at that point, right? Like, where you have peers and you kind of help each other with situational things, right? And then plus like an executive coach, but then, yeah, I call that kind of like your mentorship committee, right? At that executive level. But then at more of sort of the beginning or IC level, right? Like that's more of a one-on-one thing, right? With a mentor that actually wants to invest in your success.
And how would you go about finding a mentor? Do you find someone who's similar to you or completely different than you?
There's pros and cons to both, right? Because if they're similar to you, but they've found success, then if you kind of have the same personality traits, but they've found success in their careers, then perhaps they can say, well, this is the path that I took. I was very much like you before I did X, Y, and Z, right? So that could be very helpful for someone. On the other side, like, might be harder to adjust to because they're so different, right? And you don't necessarily have a common, you know, sort of baseline to start with. That I could see something like that leading to you know, to like just fighting, right? Like and not not getting to any place that's productive, right? But I don't know. I don't know what the right there's no right answer to that question, right? Maybe some people really like, you know, really want to find someone that's completely different from them, you know, and be able to learn why that person is so successful, even though they're so different, right? Again, pros and cons to both, right?
And do you recommend finding a mentor at your company or or do you think having both will be helpful?
I think it's better if at the IC level, right? Or like at sort of IC mid stage, you're better off getting someone within your company because they understand the context by which you're operating it, right? Otherwise, you will spend a ton of time just trying to explain what that context is to someone that's not part of the company, right? Mm-hmm. It's just, it adds a lot more time, right? And it and lots could be lost in translation, right? And so on and so forth. On the other hand, like you could, you know, folks that are outside the company may be able to provide, you know, a little bit more of an objective view on things, right? But I think the key is finding someone that's already been successful as a mentor, right? Like,
yeah.
Or already been successful in their career, and then get them as your mentor. Ideally, it's your direct manager, right? Like, it's like within your kind of stack, right?
Yeah.
Or maybe your manager's manager or something like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's a good perspective. I mean, just reflecting on like my own career, like I think I had too many outside of my company mentors, not enough inside the company.
Right? Yeah, so. Because what happens is that those mentors that you have inside the company also become your advocates, right? Like when push comes to shove, they will actually advocate for you, right? Like even mm-hmm. though they're probably telling you, you know, negative feedback all the time, right? Like,
yeah.
But they're doing that for a purpose, right? At the end of the day, they trust you and you have a really good, you have established a really deep relationship, right? That they will fight for you, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like there's just reflecting on what you shared so far. Like I definitely didn't take a lot of this advice when I was younger, right?
Yeah.
Just, you know, like sometimes like, when I hear from someone else that's not my manager, I'll listen to them. But when I hear from my manager, like it's like I don't necessarily. It takes a couple of times until I listen.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, and it's like, why should I believe you, right? Like, kind of almost, right? Kind of attitude, and that's also just a function of like being, you know, probably inexperienced, right? And not having, you know, enough years under your belt, right? So.
Yeah.
It's not uncommon, right?
Yeah, it's just like we were talking about, like, man, I wish I knew that, or I wish I kind of like, it's like, I learned the hard way, right? Instead of like having someone kind of tell me this much earlier, hopefully it would have shortened the learning curve or just like stop the resistance, you know?
Yeah. And that's the thing, like you have to be okay with being vulnerable, right? At the end of the day, because if you're not, what's going to end up happening is that you have a very superficial type of mentorship relationship, right? It doesn't, you're basically just wasting, you know, that person's time. You're wasting your own time, right? Like, and I think that's the first step, right? Is if you get someone to say yes, to be a mentor for you, better be vulnerable, right? And not necessarily hold back, because otherwise it's a waste of time.
I don't know if you've ever had this question before, but what if you had like a communication breakdown with your manager and you like lost trust with your manager? Like what can you do to kind of like repair that or move forward? Like I feel like that's like a common scenario.
Okay. So So tell me more, like what's the specific situation? Like
I
need more context.
Yeah, so let's say, you know, you're like a top performer, like you're doing well, like everything is good, But you know, let's say you violated like a social media policy or something like that, right? Okay. And then like you had like you got a slap on the hand from HR, so like, hey, like you violated sure. like an HR like policy, and then because of that, you felt like, oh, you know, like I don't necessarily trust my manager anymore because like when I was vulnerable with them, I got like a slap on the wrist because of that.
How were you vulnerable with them though? Like what, how were they involved in this social media thing?
Yeah. Like they wouldn't even have found out if you didn't have mentioned, if you didn't mention that like little okay. incident that you have with a different department at a different org essentially.
So I guess, let me ask this, like if you were in that person's shoes, like, would you act differently? Like, if you were the manager, right?
Yeah.
And then that was also your mentor, right? Would you act differently compared to what your mentor did?
Like I think it's always good to be
like honest. Would you still report it to HR? Would you still like, you know, kind of do those things?
If you were a mentor.
If you were the mentor. So in this case, the mentor is a person that you told something to, right?
Right.
And then that person who's also your manager, because of the gravity of the situation, had to tell HR that something happened. Is that the situation?
Right.
So I think that's a good learning. You know, like he or she is doing the right thing, right? Like, because
yeah,
you should learn from that situation.
Right? Okay. I see what you're saying.
Yeah. It's like, because if that person just gives you a pass because of that, then what does that say about their credibility, right? Like,
and it's like integrity type of thing.
Their integrity, yeah.
Yeah.
If I was your manager and mentor, I'd be like, you know, I'd have the tough conversation and say, how could you have done, you know, like, what would you have done differently here, right? Because this is what, this is the impact of this. You may not realize it, right? Mm. But there is a material impact to what you did.
Okay.
And make that a teaching moment, right? Huh. Like, those things are like, you don't let those pass, right? As a good mentor, you don't let those pass.
Oh, interesting. In fact,
you have to show exactly, like, you have to deal with it, right, in the right way, right, so that you can teach whoever it is that you're mentoring that that's not okay, right? Because at some point down the line, you know, that person may have might be mentoring someone else, right? And you don't want to make the mistake of just letting that thing pass.
Hmm. That's deep. Yeah. No, I appreciate that.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like, why would, yeah, like, then I would start questioning that person's integrity.
Right. Long term. It's like not thinking short term. It's thinking like, well, throughout the rest of this person's career, like we wouldn't want anything like that happen again. And like, hopefully this person learns from this incident or the slap on the hand. Right.
That's actually a perfect situation for a mentor to give you that that feedback. Right. Like it's going to be tough and it's going to be hard and you better listen to it. Right. Because at the end of the day, it's going to make you better. Right.
I think what I'm hearing is like always long-term. I think the mentor can see big picture, like a little bit like further. Sure. Whereas like sometimes the mentee is always, it's like stuck in the present, you know?
Yeah. And isn't necessarily thinking about the impact of what they're doing, right? Not only to the people around them, but like their own self downstream, right? And there could be like a material impact. For instance, like you don't get promoted because of that, or like, you know, or it could be just like a permanent impact in that you would make bad decisions like that going forward, right?
No, this is good. It's funny, so because like you said, sometimes you have to hear it more than once to kind of like get it. Cool. Well, thank you so much. Like, yeah, I feel like this is helpful because you have no idea how many people ask me about like, oh, how do I find a mentor? Or like, what, how do I go about, like, what do I even ask my mentor? Like, I think a lot of people are just, they hear that it's a good thing to do, but not a lot of people have context.
They don't know exactly like what a substantive mentor-mentee relationship is like. And a lot of it is just fairly like, they're not real, right? They're just like officially mentor, but it's like, it's not really driving you to change, right? So if you're not hearing, and if you're not getting tough conversations with your mentor, right? Like if you're not getting that feedback, that tough feedback, you should probably look for a new one, right?
Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah. I think sometimes companies do it because it's like, oh, we're investing, right? And then
I hate those programs. Those programs never, like, I feel like always fail because of that, like, you know. Yeah, it's just not real.
This has been helpful. Well, thank you so much. You know, I know you just started, and you know, there's a lot going on. So I appreciate you taking the time. I'm sure a lot of people will. I'm going to be referring a lot of people to this episode because I'm starting to mentor a bunch of people. So like you said, like just having good habits and really modeling that behavior, right? Like not letting things like slide and
no. The moment you do that, right? Like it gives them they will do the same thing to other people. And then it just becomes this circle of, this vicious circle. Right. Okay, cool.
Cool. Well, thank you so much. And, I'm sure I'll be seeing you around, and best of luck.
Take care.
Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.